Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about in-depth trivia to the periodic table. Now, a lot of people find the periodic table some 82-ish or 100 elements around that level. Most people will know the number of players in a football team, and say three football teams, you know, by hangers-on you get up to around 100. So a lot of people know these types of information, but when it comes to them and explained to them multiple times in schools and stuff like this, and it's big, people don't really get to understand it. And so over the time, I've been getting to understand, and I've understood it in a certain way. I think I'm gradually up to memorising the entire periodic table, and it's been a bit hard because a lot of the element names are the same, similar. They could be in, because it's got this regular pattern stuff, it actually makes learning it difficult, and so it's just taken a labour of love over several weeks as I've gone through, and I can sort of progress certain ways. So I'm almost up to the end of the periodic table. I'm sort of cruising through the F block, that's the block underneath, which I call subtable. And so, essentially, like, if you know an area well enough, you can actually, say, a bushwalking area, you get to know your little paths, and you sort of have your own colloquial name for various things. So rather than saying block, I say subtable. And various things, rather than saying post-transition metals, I say P-block metals, or P-metals is, I believe, a more powerful way of describing what's going on. And then when you're discussing the structure of the periodic table, there's sort of a meta-structure, which has gone from, it's been handed to us from the alchemists who have had magic. And the key thing to magic is that there's been a magician that, well, magic can happen, a spell has to be cast, a person has to be involved. And although people are really focused on the magic, when you look at it from the outside, the magic has the magician in with it. And then you've had the heroic scientist stories, these people sort of lost in history, fighting their way through the periodic table, a bit like intrepid explorers in the Age of Empire, wanting to claim bits of India and bits of the planet. They also wanted to claim for the glory, the glorious empires, bits of the periodic table, which are sort of very interesting to look at. So from this age of alchemists, you get the professional scientists, but you also have the door-to-door salesman trying to interest you in an array of confusing products. You know, compare this with this one, or you want to buy that vacuum cleaner, that type of thing, selling the wares of the periodic table. And means that there's I think we're actually going through an era of periodic table confusion. So I read books and you sort of, there's mistakes in it, or I read sort of statements, you know, about the periodic table and different groups, and you just get this uneasiness about it as you say, oh, they've made a mistake, but they've set themselves up as an authority. And so it's sort of like someone who's selling you cough medicine. They have all the testimonials, they have all the degrees, but they're selling you cough medicine. And sort of there's more to it. So to give you a picture of the way that I'm sort of seeing it at the moment, imagine the periodic table as these a large building with suburb little houses for each element up the top. And they're arranged in rows, neat little rows. You can drive up and down them, or across them, and there's sort of little districts, neighbourhoods, sort of like the Parisian French Quarter, or the left bank, the right bank of the periodic table. You can go like that, and then you can go underneath, and then there's layers of history, stories. They're connected in different ways, and then sort of just like a large building. It's the basement car park, and then you can go deeper and deeper, and they're less connected. The stories are less connected, and the stories more tell you about the services. So you've got the periodic table there, and you've got these cultural service layers going underneath, and eventually I'm really down in the real boondocks of the culturals, the services of the services, how the services are linked together. And so I want to actually, in this particular episode, and it won't be a very long episode, thankfully it's only about 5 minutes so far to get here, is actually talk about my experience of going through periodic table and certain links. And this is the heavenly bodies things. And I just, you know, ripped my teeth out. That's what a term that I tend to use, just the agony of actually going through this. And so, I don't know, I suppose the very first, I'll just say how it's unfolded with me. The very first thing you learn about is helium. And they said that it was discovered in the sun by looking at lines in the sun, and therefore helium is sort of one of the family of elements that was discovered sort of by second tier spectroscopy. This first tier spectroscopy, which gave you strontium, rubidium, cesium for sure. And then you've got indium and and thallium. Yeah, they're ones which were by the gross colours, and there's other ones which are finer ones. So in that class of sticking in a Bunsen flame or sticking in a torch or something like that, what colours to get out? So helium's in that level. So when you actually get into the cultural stories, the cultural stories may have several things coming together to describe what's going on. So with helium, it was the method of discovery is there, but the response is it's been named after the place it's seen. So the helium is the element of the sun. And you could say perhaps lithium is the element of the earth, because it's rocks, and we think rocks on earth, but it's sort of like lithium is actually particularly poorly, in terms of the cultural pedigree, it's a pretty poor, boring one, as far as I'm concerned. So that's lithium, hydrogen, helium, lithium, going up. And so I started off with this one element I knew, and then I had sort of known about uranium and plutonium a lot of the times, but then it's only when I looked at uranium, neptunium, and plutonium that, and then read about, and it was sort of just in the background, oh yeah, it's a bit of interest, oh, it's named after those three outer planets, and sort of neptunium, Pluto is no longer a planet, so it's sort of a dating, dates the periodic table. It's dated with the scientific beliefs of the time. It's beautiful. So you have four things, and so you read on the internet what elements are named after different heavenly bodies, and on the internet by these authorities they may mention the sun, but they'll definitely mention Uranus, Neptune, and uranium, neptunium, and plutonium. They'll definitely mention that. So you've got there, and so you can see that generalized gist, and your general understanding corresponds to the general instruction that's given. So that's all well. You get no feeling of tension. And then many years later, you say, well, I'm unsure of this. For me, I had a bit of trouble remembering the sequence between phosphorus and sulfur. So I thought, well, I'd better get back into this and get to look at it. And I had the cardiac rehab. I had the ability of getting coherence sentences out one after the other. And so I began reading aloud. I picked up the periodic table of elements books, and I thought, I'm going to read right through this, and it seemed very, very long, very, very hard. And then I came across two other elements, I came across tellurium, and tellurium is an element which has got sort of two origin stories. One is or two interest stories. One is it's an element which smells, and it smells of garlic. Yeah, the garlic, so that's interesting. As a side thing, your eyes skim over. It was named after the plant Earth. So you sort of forget about that there, and then you're going back and you're making a statement, oh, there are four elements named after heavenly bodies. And it's at the back of your head, as almost in your sleep, it says, no, hang on, there's tellurium, which is named after the Earth, so now it should be actually five. Now you're in a difficulty thing, is because now your version of discussing the periodic table is now significantly different from the communal snake oil, not snake oil, but doors to store salesmen, people who are true to the periodic table, they're true to the alchemy tradition of the periodic table, and there's the science tradition of the periodic table. And now there's sort of like an information science, which I suppose I am from, a tradition of the periodic table, looking at the complex databases. So I'm almost like database mining. You know, if you've got a population and they want to see who's doing what and how, it's like big data. I'm looking to the periodic table. So that's okay. And then I sort of say, oh well, tellurium's there. I've spent chalcogenides. I do a podcast on chalcogenides and the interest of it and the ability to make new types of glasses. And I'm interested in chalcogenides because they're switchable. Their properties are switchable. And so if your properties are switchable, they can make switches. And if the properties switch permanently, they can be made into memories. And so tellurium is the stuff that we use to record your wedding photographs on. And there's compact discs, and there's various other versions of things going on. The chalcogenides. So I've got this problem that of pronunciation as well. So all of this thing. I'm slowly working on it. I'm slowly working on the four levels of strategy parallel to actually do podcasting, the actual podcasting itself, the software which produces the podcast, the software to at the level to go into Feedburner and stuff like that, and then realizing that Feedburner's a legacy technology. It's a technology which is going to finish. I've got to look at how to migrate it into more modern things. You look Google Feedburner, oh, that's safe, but you don't realise that Google is an orphan of Google. Google's going to drop it eventually. So I have to work out how to, and this is also explains a bit all my software and code. It's just not going to actually present something the way that I want to, because the software's dead. It's like going into a tomb, an Egyptian tomb, and complaining that the actual stuff, that the crockery of left by Tutankhamun, is incomplete. It doesn't work as well as it should be. I'm going to complain to the designer. Well, the design's been several thousand years ago. Then it's not there. It's a graveyard thing. So that sort of explains it. So that's the levels going in. That gives the sort of motivation for looking at the next thing. You rock up at selenium. Ah, selenium is there. Ah, so what that actually means? Selenium is actually named after the moon. And why is it named after the moon? Well, it's the element after it's named after the Earth, and it's also a smelly element. So and there's bromine, which is stench, and osmium, which only recently is an odorific element. They're the elements that stink, the stinky elements. It's four stinky elements, and two of them are named for stink, and two are not named for stink. Not like galhonium and horseradishum could be it would be much easier to say. People will remember horseradishum rather than selenium after a moon. But again, you've got this historical stuff. At this historical time, they believed naming after Greek terms is a thing to do. So, which is rather strange because a lot of the names of different planets are after Latin names or Roman names, and you've got the Greek. This complexity where it just doesn't quite. It's a bit of a head scratcher when you get going to look at it. So, yeah, it's really looking into that. So, you now realise that the periodic table's got this law, this connectivity that the people at the time did. Well, I'll name this element after the moon because the element next to it is named after the down the table is named after the earth, and it also smells. And it's this sort of thing that is important to the scientists at the time, but is long lost. So people up here are going, well, how can I remember this? What's the story of it? And surely I have got my stuff from my authority from a brand name source. So a lot of people like to get their information from, say, CNN or Fox News or fake news or things like that. Or they associate their news not with its factuality but where it comes from. So if from the internet it says, look, there's various three planets associated with heavenly bodies, you could stretch it to four. Then there's this general emotional response against saying, well, look, there's actually six planets, and of course I wouldn't do this unless there's another boom-boom idea for it. But the people's response to you is not a response that they don't like you, and it's not a response that this is not probably true. They just are not going to put the effort in to listen and understand. And that's because they've got a loyalty, a behavioural loyalty to their information source, which is an artefact of the various times. If you look at the behaviour of human history through the periodic table, at different things, people had a code of behaviour which was very unique to them. So if you saw an alchemist, that alchemist, you don't meet them today, but if there was an alchemist today, that would be a bit like Merlin. There's a bit of magic in it, a bit of, you wouldn't be able to relate to them too well. They've got their own system relationship with knowledge which is involved with their behaviour. So the clientele at the moment, your general clientele has the same tradition. So there's certain things which are constant, and sort of when you know they're constant, you can analyse them. It's sort of like the big data view. But of course, it doesn't end there. There is actually a seventh element of the periodic table, which is named after an astronomical body. And having gone through it and having learnt them all the names of the periodic table, it just seems almost impossible. How can this be? There's no Jupiterium, there's no Saturnium, there's no Venetian or something like that. But indeed, there is an element, and it's called Cerium, for Ceres, the dwarf planet, which was discovered around 1800, which is sort of all mentally confusing. But the person who discovered Cerium said, look, we've got a tradition name now of naming planets after naming elements after planets, and we've just discovered a new planet called Ceres, and I'm going to name it after this dwarf planet. So there's, if you go down the periodic table, and I'm learning the F blocks, so I'm not too sure. Oh yeah, it goes lanthanum, ceriums, so it's after Ceres, C-E-R-E-S. So there'd be someone who's actually a proper academic who will be able to say, oh, no, you don't pronounce it Ceres, it's Ceres or something like that, Cerium. So Cerium is a rare earth element used for polishing glass. I definitely know that. We use that for polishing the end of optical fibres. I'm sure it's snake oil sold to you, but it does. It's a sort of a rather a nice glass polish. White works would be very, very interesting. So it was discovered around 18 something or other, and it's another planet. And again, that's sort of like Tripoli. I can imagine three reasons people wouldn't want to know it. They wouldn't want to know it because it contradicts their sources that there are only three elements. A seventh element is way in a contradiction. It sort of contradicts because Pluto was discovered in the 19 something or others. Oh no, I don't know when Pluto was discovered, but you know, Pluto is discovered, you know, 100 years after this, yet Ceres is actually not considered a planet. So what exactly is going on there? So there's a lot of understanding and a general belief that the sort of a meta belief that they know enough. Sort of like this other thing besides brand loyalty to the brand at which I was first introduced to the periodic table. There's also the assurance that when I teach you, you will know enough. So come up to my little snake oil stall. I'll tell you this factoid, which you can take along, and guess what? It's got a guarantee with it. You know enough. So there's sort of this consumerism, which is sort of like a cap on the end of their behaviour. So you want consumers to behave in such a way that they're satisfied with their product and sort of go away happily, part with money with their product and be loyal to the product. So you want to, it's sort of like you want them to sell the product. And to sell them the product, they've got to be happy with the product and they've got to also sell the product. It's sort of this expansion version. And really, yeah, I suppose the way that I would look at it is the big data aspect to the periodic table. And it's sort of the entire aspect of big data is that the data, the Facebook profiles of these things have a lot of information and they're not solid things, but they're connections in certain ways and connections on certain levels which come together, say smell, smell, spectroscopy, who they're named after, it's part of the history. It's a real, really interesting aspect to it. And I'm going to conclude this. I've got up to 22 minutes, so I'm going to conclude this with the names which didn't make it. There's a couple of names which, there's certain names which I think shouldn't have made it. Lithium, I'm rather dark on lithium because it's a lack of imagination. You know, like after all this bit of a story, you're listening to it and your chin falls off your hand. Is it what? Oh, what the heck is lithium? Yeah, it's beryllium used to be called. This is a name that didn't make it for beryllium. Beryllium, used to be named after, it was proposed provisionally, named for a number of years, had a periodic table letter G, and you go, oh, what's that for? Oh, it's like glucose, gluconium, it tastes like sugar. And of course that of course didn't make it. You can imagine the amount of confusion in science lessons afterwards. You know, this could be beryllium, which is probably true. You could probably, you know, you might taste beryllium. Another one is protactinium. It's it goes as actinium, thorium, proactinium, and then uranium as you go up the actinides. And this is the very last, the boondocks of the period, not the complete boondocks of boondocks. This is where the periodic table is getting a bit more interesting and academic. So protactinium was extremely reactive, and the person who discovered it decided he would call it Brev. And I don't know what the letters are. It wouldn't be B, it wouldn't be BE, beryllium. It wouldn't be BR for bromium. I don't know how he was going to do it, name it. But he was going to name it Brev, for being brief. And it's sort of like barium for heaviness. It's brief. And of course, he didn't get up. So it got up from it. They actually said, "Oh, we're not going to accept that. Can we accept another element?" And it actually has one of these derivative names of another element. There's also Ecky. There should be Ecky sausage, but Ecky something. So there used to be elements used to be named before they discovered them. Ecky something or other. I think Ecky germanium, maybe gallium or something like that. There was gaps in the periodic table, and so they could say the one here, it's sort of like this one, it's the gap one. So this is, it's sort of interesting that protactinium is sort of a band-aid name, because it wasn't named correctly, and it's a band-aid name which survived, whereas other names have been band-aid names and have been revised upwards and changed. But this is sort of like a historical thing for it. So it's, the periodic table is a bit like a crime scene where you can actually deduce so much through it, and like the more you know, the deeper you can see into the history of it. So the periodic table is a two-way cultural thing. It's where quantum mechanics meets human history, and it's not over yet. Our reactions to the periodic table, our aggressiveness in the periodic table. So people are quite aggressive. You may not be quite aggressive, but around here, if you say, oh, look, mate, there's actually not three, not four, not six, but seven little planets floating around the periodic table, they'd go, oh, well, you're just going to get in trouble. You're just making trouble for yourself. It's not against it's against the syllabus. And you almost, as they respond, you start to do big data on the their response and say, well, yeah, you're in the line. You're somewhere in the line from the alchemists going forward who have this relationship with knowledge or phenomena which involves a society or a belief system which goes out rather than their self-sustained interest. Now, I really, really definitely hope that's the last, but it won't be, that's the last podcast I'll do on the periodic table. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.